Mrs. McWeb, if you can remember, why did your parents, or what, for what reason did your parents settle in Monroe?
Well, I'll go back to just after the turn of the century. In 1908, we moved from a big farm in Flat Rock. I think my father was too much of it. He didn't care for farming. He hired the farm work done, and he had run the tile yard in Flat Rock, and he had run the creamery, and he just wanted to get out from farming. And we left a beautiful old farmhouse. I remember Mama telling about the kitchen fireplace. They'd bring in these huge logs. It was all one side of this big room. And the year we moved, my oldest brother was graduating from high school, and he would be going to Ann Arbor to engineering school. And my oldest sister, who's 2 years older than I, had started teaching school. So Papa thought he would find a place in Monroe, the nearest. He didn't want to go into as large a place as Detroit. And he had, at one time, bought a house in Ipsy, and we lived there 2 weeks. I don't even remember that. But he sold it, and he decided to move to Monroe.
He sounds like he definitely wasn't a farmer then.
He wasn't, no. So we came to Monroe, and I remember my father saying, "Betty, when we get to Monroe, you just have to press a button and the whole room will light up." We had gasoline. My father was very progressive. I think we had the first bathtub in Flat Rock, because I remember Mama telling about an old fellow that came to the farmhouse, and he said, "Mrs. Upton, I've heard they have bathtubs just for taking baths." And he said, "I would be curious. Would you mind if I came over and took a bath in the bathtub?" So my mother said, "No, you could come over and had the luxury of taking a bath in a bathtub." But Papa was very progressive. We had running water at the farm, and these lights that, I think they must have been gasoline lights.
This was in the early 1900s,
yes.
Yet.
But when Papa told me, I was 4 when we moved, and Papa told me that I would just press a button and see the room light up, I could hardly imagine that. But the first thing when we got in this house, it was a house over on South Macomb Street, next to where Charlie Greening lived. And I think Dr. Myers lives in that house now. In the Greening house. Our house they tore down.
On South Macomb Street.
On South Macomb. And Papa, I remember him taking me up in his arms, and he told me to press that little button. And I did. And the Greenings lived next door to us, and the Goodmans on the other side of us.
Were there automobiles at that time?
There were two automobiles in town.
And this was around 1904 or 1905?
1908.
I was four.
I was born in 1904 and moved in 1908. And I verified that. I've been telling that when I was a little girl, when we first moved to Monroe, there were only two automobiles. But it sounded a little, when I hear all the traffic that there is today, I thought, now maybe I'm telling a fib. So just recently, I met Nineta Fashbaugh, who was Nineta Greening. And I hadn't seen her since I was 7.
Oh, boy.
And I met her over at the tea they gave for Mrs. Rye when she was 90.
That was quite an occasion.
Yes. And I said, "There's one thing I want to ask you." how many cars were in Monroe when in 1908 when we moved next to you, next door to you. And she said there were two. My father had one, and I don't know, someone that made a lot of money, probably a doctor, and had the other one. And the Greenings were lovely neighbors. We were very fond of them. And I'll just tell a little sidelight. Ninetta's mother and father had gone back to Germany on a trip. And Mrs. Greening had brought home to Monroe some lovely silk. And the dressmaker was going to come to make up this silk dress for Mrs. Greening. And she'd cut it out. I suppose they had a sewing room because that was a very large house. And she'd cut it out and had left it partially finished and probably gone down to have dinner, which we always had at noon. And I think the Greenings did too. I think everyone had their dinner at noon in those days. And Ninetta was going to make Katie Watkins, who lived in back and was my age, she was my best girlfriend. She said she'd make us new doll clothes for our dolls. See, Ninetta would be older than I.
I see.
And so she ran up to the sewing room and saw this material on the table. And not knowing it was the sleeve that the dressmaker had cut out, she cut up the one of the sleeves for our doll dress.
Oh, boy.
So I think Mrs. Greening probably either went around with one sleeve dress, or a sleeveless dress, or maybe in those days they made georgette sleeves. But I had always remembered that.
You suppose that young lady got her bottom walked for?
Well, now I don't know. I think they were very understanding people. And one thing about going over to the Greenings I remembered, and I asked Ninetta about this too, was the big bear that they used for a coat rack either. It was a stuffed, real life bear, alive when they stopped.
A stuffed bear.
Yeah, stuffed bear that had been alive at one time. And the seat lifted up, and they put the galoshes and whatnot in there. But I remember seeing the bear standing like this on his hind legs. And there was a musical chair in the foyer. And when you sat on it, it played, and when you got up. Now, either, Ninetta said, one of her sisters either had the bear or the musical chair, but one had been stolen.
Mm-hmm. The Greenings sound like that they were fairly well-to-do people.
He was the head of the Greening nursery.
Oh,
And I remember him wearing a high silk cap, and I remember he was an official at the, in 1910, the Custer Monument was dedicated. And Mr. Greening, I remember seeing him leave the house to probably get in the second car in Monroe. Maybe by 1910 they had maybe three cars, I don't know. But it was a coal car, I remember.
A coal, a C-O-L-A, yes. coal car.
And with his high silk hat to go over to the festivities.
Mm-hmm. And Do you remember those festivities?
I just remember going. I couldn't see anything because I was kind of short and fat. And being only, I would have been six. And, well, it was according to what time of the year. I was probably only five because part of the year I would have been five.
Right. The president, one of the presidents was here at that time.
President Taft.
President Taft, yeah.
Was the president.
And you can't remember that?
Yes, I can remember hearing someone say that's the president. And one thing I remember, we'd take the Pier Marquette train to New Boston. One of my older sisters lived in New Boston. And I can remember going down to the station and taking the train.
You could go a lot of places by train in those days,
yes.
Couldn't you?
And we could go down to the Monroe Piers on the streetcar for a dime, I think.
What
would go down there for picnic?
I of course, that's been long gone, but
yeah.
I don't know anything about the Monroe Piers. What was Monroe Piers like?
Well, the Monroe Piers, when I first remember it, they had rides like a merry-go-round.
An amusement park.
An amusement park, more or less. And then they had this, I don't know when the Lotus Hotel was built, but there was a hotel there. And cottages, I remember. In fact, I think the Greenings had a cottage down there.
Probably, if they were.
And they had, remember they sold Cracker Jack. And a little boy in my class came to school with a fountain pen. And I asked him where he'd gotten it. I'd never seen a fountain pen before.
And this was around 1910 or so.
Yes. Well, of course, I was a little girl, and little girls didn't have fountain pens, and we had inkwells at school. Mm-hmm. So I asked him where he'd gotten it, and he said he got it in Cracker Jack, a box of Cracker Jack. So I wasn't particularly fond of Cracker Jack. I liked the kind my mother made in a great big wooden bowl. She'd pop a big bowl full of popcorn. And Cracker Jack tasted a little stale to me. So I wasn't about to spend my nickels on Cracker Jack until I thought I might have a fountain pen as a prize. So then all my nickels, and we'd buy Cracker Jack down at the piers.
Oh, I see.
And ice cream cones. But I didn't ever get a fountain pen. And afterwards, I remember asking him, I said, I had a lot of Cracker Jack, and I don't ever find a fountain pen. And then he confessed that his uncle, who was a car dealer in Toledo, had the fountain pens for souvenirs. And he hadn't gotten it in Cracker Jack after all.
I hope you didn't waste too many nickels on Cracker Jacks.
No, not after that. And when we moved, the house that we lived next to Greening's, I don't know how many bedrooms it had in it, and a big fireplace. But my mother, having three married sisters by that time, one sister still taught, my oldest sister, but two married sisters that had two children. The house had to be big enough for them to come weekends, and enough bedrooms.
Oh, I see. So the whole family came home.
Yes, the house wasn't big enough. So Papa had an opportunity to buy an old Ilgen Fritz house on North Macomb. And that was in 1910. We lived in over in the year that they dedicated the monument, we moved over on North Macomb.
I see.
And the house was between Noble and Lorraine Street. And we had a big barn. Cows, two horses, ducks, chickens, a big cherry orchard. It went back almost to Hollywood Drive. And Hollywood Drive, of course, is considered the place. And I would like those people to know that we drove our cows down Hollywood Drive.
Well, it sounds like your house then was somewhere where the Kennedy place is and Mrs. Gray's home on that side of the street?
Yes, in that block.
I see.
And
well, then you're familiar with our house then, across
yes.
the street.
Oh, yes.
Well,
yes,
I've been trying for since we've lived there to find out when our house was built, and I can't. I'm thinking somewhere in the 1930s, but maybe it was before that.
I think it was before that.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Because
yours is the either the land house or the land. Mm-hmm. Yes. I know a little something about Mr. Land.
Oh, well, I'd be interested in that personally.
Yeah, okay. About him liking corned beef and cabbage, and his wife didn't like it because she had smelled up the curtains. So Mom had told him that when we had corned beef and cabbage, he was welcome to come down and sit at our table, which he did.
Well, that's nice. Your father, what did your father do? He sounds like he was quite successful.
He was very successful. He was... And Oliver Golden.
And that name is familiar.
Yes, he was the lawyer here then, one of the big lawyers. And young Oliver is still
here. He's still here, yes.
And Oliver Golden told me that my father was one of a vanishing breed, a real true American gentleman.
Ah, that's a very nice compliment.
That was a very good compliment, nice compliment. And Papa put in Fern Court, and named it after my sister Fern.
Oh, all right.
I had a sister friend. And the reason that it doesn't go all the way through, a lady over on Lorraine, she'll go nameless, I don't know her name anyway, but she was a little tricky. She thought she was, she told my father she'd sell him enough land so that he could put Fern Court right through to Lorraine Street.
Yes.
So it wouldn't be a dead end street. But whether, I wouldn't like to think that she was going to hold him up for more money, but I do think after he got the street started, that was in her mind.
I see.
And she wouldn't sell him the property for what she had agreed to. So my father wasn't going to vote to give her what
any
she demanded.
Money. Yes.
And because she'd agreed to sell it for that. So it was just a dead-end street, and it is to this day.
Right. I'll be darned. Well, that's, I've often wondered why and
yes.
how some of these short streets got in,
yes.
you know, in
well,
the
that was the reason for that.
For Fern Court. I'll be darned.
And
I'll bet those people don't know that. The
no,
people who live there.
No, probably not. And there weren't too many cars then, even when Papa... But we did drive our cows down Hollywood. I think that was called Cook's Lane then.
Well, I'm glad to know that the people who live in Hollywood, I mean, there's a little come down
yes.
somewhere there, isn't
yes.
there?
Yeah.
They live on Cow Lane.
And it's hard for the children to understand how we could have cows and horses in a barn. Mm-hmm. So,
yes, the house in back of us, I think, still has, where Mrs. Alexander lives now, has a horse barn.
Yes.
It has a two-story
yes.
barn.
Yes. 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 And Hoffman's were our neighbors, Cook's on the corner, and then our old lit brick. And Papa built the house where Barb Walters lives now.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, and he built it for my mother for a surprise. She
oh, nice.
Said he built the house, and Mama said, Albert, you'll have to be careful who you rent to, because they're pretty close to the old brick where we lived. And he said, surprise, Lizzie, I built it for you to move into. And she says, surprise, Albert, I'll not move into it. If you wanted to build me a house, you should have asked what kind of a house I wanted. And she said, when I go in the kitchen, I would have to get a stepladder to look out the windows. They were building little high windows over the sinks then.
Yes.
And my mother was short. And she said, I spend 75% of my time in the kitchen, and I'm not about to get a stepladder to look out the window. So my mother never moved into the house.
Is that right?
No.
Then the house that's on Macomb Street, or the spot on Macomb Street where there is no house?
That was our house.
It burned or something? Is that
no,
what, no, it was?
A man, who shall go nameless, finally bought the house from my father, the new house.
Mm-hmm.
And... my mother, by this time, we were living down in the Ashcraft house, a brick house down the street. And so Mama was lonesome to go back in the old brick. See, it was because our family was getting married, and the house was kept getting larger and larger, and the family smaller and smaller. So Papa thought, out of deference to my mother, that she was doing too much work.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to like a woman to do her washing all right, but she liked to keep her own house. She didn't want anyone doing her work. And Papa had after he'd sold that house, oh yes, he had sold the house to this gentleman. And Mama said, I won't be happy till we get back in the old brick. So he approached this man who had bought it and wanted to buy it. And the man said, I'd just as soon have you for neighbors as anyone, but I don't want anyone.
Oh.
And he tore that beautiful old place down.
I see. That's interesting.
So.
Well, your mother spent a lot of time then in the kitchen. Did it
with well, nine children.
Oh, nine.
My mother was an angel. And I was the youngest. I had never heard her raise her voice. She never put a hand on us to spank us that I ever remember.
Well, you were lucky.
And
then.
She raised nine children.
She must have been very understanding with children.
She was wonderful.
A woman's role in those days was mostly cook and watch children.
The only thing she didn't, she said the Lord would have to forgive her for not going to church, because when she got to church and the music started playing, the organ, and it was quiet, she'd fall asleep. And it embarrassed her. So she wouldn't go to church.
I can't blame her much for that. It sometimes does the same thing to me. Yes.
She lulled her to sleep.
That's very interesting.
But I had never, she was never ill. She told me she'd never had a headache. She said, Betty, she was Canadian, and they're a little slower. I mean, in their movements, you know, and their traffic even over in Canada is slower. And she said, I really don't know what it means to be physically tired. She said, I get sleepy, but I don't, my body doesn't get tired.
Well, she was lucky. Well, she probably had so much to do, though.
Yes, and she did it so easy, and she never worried. She always told me the worst of all your worries are the ones that never happen. So she just refused to worry. She didn't worry about anything.
How about some things, you know, how did you get around in Monroe? Streetcars?
We of course, the Interurban went through Monroe.
Right, where did that go?
That went from Detroit to Cleveland.
I see.
And then there was a branch that went to Mount Clemens, but I'd only been on that. I'd gone on once with some friends that had friends in Mount Clemens. But the one was from Monroe to Toledo. And when I see all these eating places and this new place going up in the shopping center, I wonder, does anyone eat at home anymore? When we moved to Monroe, there were two places you could eat. If you were a little posh, you ate at the Park Hotel. And if you weren't so posh, but they served good food. And I don't know if it was called the Custer Restaurant then, but there was a little restaurant over on Monroe Street. And you could eat at the Interurban Depot.
Oh.
They serve very good food there upstairs. But the Park Hotel was a place to
dine.
And when my husband was in business, he had a little laugh. He said the salesman that came to the drugstore, he didn't know anything about Monroe, and he moved from Canada over to Detroit and then out to Rockwood, where I met him.
Yes.
And they would say, Monroe's all right, but you have to sleep in the park.
The Park Hotel, of course.
Yeah. And the salesmen then didn't zip around like they do now, and they would stay overnight in the town that they...
Oh, I see. They came in and they stayed and they sold their whatever it was that they were selling.
And Monroe, I remember Bear's department store and something funny there. They had an electric man. An electric man for an attraction, and he was in the window so many hours a day, and he moved by, they turned a switch and he would move.
Is that right?
So there was I think they were going to give all of $5 as a prize if you could make the electric man smile. And a lady came to our house who had a boarding house over on First Street, and the electric man was boarding there while his stay was in Monroe. And she came over to see my mother one afternoon while the electric man was in town, and she said that he had confided to her that he had almost laughed that day. Some old couple came from the farm, and the old lady says, I wonder if I'd stick my hat pin in him if he'd move.
But the electric man was a real man, though.
Yes,
and I think
he went from city to city.
I see.
Then I was telling the children the other day, I guess these children here, in the library, and I said, you know where Front Street is? Yes. And all the cars that go up and down, yes. And one little girl said, that's the street that Cavies is on. I said, yes, Front Street. I said, now can you imagine elephants coming down Front Street and a cage with a lion in it and a cage with a tiger in it and a cage with monkeys in it? And of course that seems preposterous to them.
To kids nowadays.
No, they couldn't imagine it.
Yes.
And I said, well, when I was, I think the last one I remember, I was in high school, in the 20s. And I said, at noon, they usually had the parades around noon, but I think in, so that the school children could see them. Yeah. But I think they even let us out a little early so we wouldn't miss the parade. And we went over town and stood on the curb, heard the band music and the calliope.
Oh, that sounds thrilling. I'd like to have heard
and
that.
And here came the elephants and the girls in the silk tights.
A regular circus parade in old time.
It was just like a circus, parading right down Front Street.
Where did they hold, you know, what
the
in
circus,
what area?
Would I they remember have? Going to the circus, one of the circuses, over where the racetracks used to be in Monroe.
Well, now.
Way over beyond Michigan and Riverview.
Oh, is that right?
That went. There were
I didn't even know. Monroe
father,
must have been very progressive.
Yes,
racetracks.
My father always kept a fast horse. And he didn't race in the races mm-hmm. because I think he thought that might be like gambling. He didn't approve of that. But he always kept a fast horse. I remember one of the horses' name was Lord Elton.
Lord Elton.
Lord Elton. And Lord Elton, I can remember seeing Lord Elton.
Those sound like the good old days.
Yes. And the family theater, the Reaper Theater, and the old family theater. And we could go for a nickel to the Reaper Theater. So one time, early in life, that might have been 1912 or 13, and Marie Dressler was going to appear on the stage at the Reaper Theater. So we all got our dimes together, our nickels. The children were nickel. And went to on Saturday afternoon to see a real live movie star, right in the flesh. Marie Dressler.
Monroe, I remember the name, I don't remember the person. Monroe sounds like it had a lot more to do for young
yes.
people in those days than it does now.
So we went to the show, and the manager came out, Mr. Reaper, with his white mustache. And he bowed, and he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I am sorry, but Marie Dressler's train was late. She was just making a stop, you see, and they were going to rush her over to the theater to make an appearance, mm-hmm. and then back on the train. And she will not be appearing, but if you line up at the window, you will all get your money back."
Oh.
So we got our nickels back.
Is that something that you did often? Were you able to go to the movies and things often?
If we had a nickel on Saturday, we could go to the movies.
Were,
were
nickels hard to come by sometimes?
It's very hard. But I want to tell you that we could, if we had 6 cents, we could see the theater, we could see the performance at the movie house and buy a penny ice cream cone.
Oh.
A penny ice cream cone.
For 6 cents, the movie and an ice cream.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
And the movies, I remember flashing. The women in 1910 and 11 and 12 were wearing these huge hats with plumes and cabbage roses.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were very unfortunate, you got sat behind a woman with a big hat on. So I think so many people complained that I remember it over at the Family Theater more than at the Reaper Theater, but they had a sign that flashed on it that said, "Ladies, please remove your hats."
I can remember seeing those in cartoons
yes.
and things like that.
And we saw the pearl white things and held our breath when she was on the railroad track and the train was coming.
And the good old days of movies.
And there were two, I don't know their names, two men always on the street that peddled handbills. And the old folks would remember this. They were called the Fitty Boys.
Fitty Boys?
Fitty Boys. And they wore, summer and winter, I think, they wore long overcoats that flapped around their ankles and little derby hats. I don't ever remember seeing the Fitties. And one would take one side of the street, and the other with these handbills.
This was to announce coming attractions, or
mm-hmm.
what was happening at the movie?
Mm-hmm.
You see?
And then I remember the spinach lady. She came from the East End someplace, and she always had a basket of spinach. She sold spinach. Now she made, because she had the nickname of the spinach lady, and she was a very nice old lady, but she went, got all the streets and carried this big basket on her arm. Then of course the fruit men would go through. Mr. Spagliola had a fruit wagon, and Tony Spagliola was in my class. And Tony told me one day, he skipped school, and Miss Grant was our teacher, and she was very strict. So one day he said, Elizabeth, come here. He said, if you tell Miss Grant that you saw me at my father's fruit wagon, I can tell her that was why I wasn't in school, which was true. He was standing there. He knew I liked bananas, and he said, I'll give you 3 bananas. So I took the 3 bananas and went home. Well, I remember walking in our big old dining room, people easily, because it's stretched out. And my father, they waited dinner for me at noon, and they wondered why I was so long, because I was in first grade then. And here I came in with these 3 bananas. And my mother said, well, where did you get the bananas? That's why you're late. And I told her that Tony Spagliola, very innocently, I said, Tony Spagliola said he would give me 3 bananas if I would tell Miss Grant that he was working for his father, the fruit wagon. And of course my mother told me, well, was he? And I said, well, I don't know if he was working, but he was standing there. And to this day, my one sister is 91 years old, and if I would go out there to the farm to this day, she'd say, how's Tony Spagliola, Betty? I heard Tony Spagliola all my life.
Is that right? Yeah, that's something you'll never get away from, no. Is it? Oh, okay. Tell me about holidays and things. Were they a big...
Oh, 4th of July. We'd go, nearly everyone would go down to the piers, Monroe Piers, because they would shoot the fireworks over the lake.
Over the lake, yes.
And I had a little experience. I was going with the Osgoods. And my mother didn't take too much time out for picnics. We'd had picnics in our yard. But when, as a rule, if we went on a picnic to the lake, we would go with someone else, a neighbor. So I'd gone with the Osgoods out to the piers, and Mr. Osgood had fixed up a basket with fireworks in it, firecrackers and Roman candles and all this.
Oh.
But we weren't to shoot them. Robert was the Osgood boy. Robert wasn't to shoot them off until we got down there, and everyone was shooting off firecrackers.